Save big money on protecting your garden now at Menards. Messina's Animal Stopper is a liquid repellent that prevents animals from damaging your garden. Available in a convenient, ready-to-use bottle. It lasts for up to 30 days, regardless of weather and watering. Save big money on Messina's Animal Stopper at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Extra time.
Welcome back to the Football Daily Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. And we have a very, very special one for you guys at home today. Now, joining me is, of course, one of my favourite people in the world, Doogie Critchley. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you. I'm very excited about this. We've got an actual expert on the Extra Time podcast. What a time to be alive. Yeah, very excited for this podcast. How are you, Zach?
I'm not too bad, thank you. But yes, let's introduce our expert. He is the Chelsea football correspondent for Goal. It's none other than Nizar Kinsella. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm buzzing to make my debut on the pod. It's been some time coming, but I'm here. And what a day to do it on. Bloody hell.
It's been a busy few weeks for you, I guess, then recently, with the Chelsea news.
Yeah, going around, following Chelsea, but then with all this hanging over you, like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen today? And you're like, oh, somebody's been sanctioned. There'll just be an argument, you know, statements on a website arguing with each other, Middlesbrough versus Chelsea yesterday. Just like, all right, yeah, fine. Yeah, just something else mad will happen. And it just gets to the point where you're like, you can't even believe this is your job at a certain point. Because, you know, you sign up to talk up Christian Pulisic and Kai Havertz and spending your days like hunting down a government source or something like that. You're like, wow.
Now you've got to be a geopolitical expert. Yeah.
Yeah, this is strange. So, yeah, I mean, I thought I'd done it all with Chelsea. 6 years here. There's been transfer bans. There's been players like trying to fight their way out of the club. There's been sackings here, there, and everywhere. I thought, oh, yeah, this club is pretty exciting. But, you know, now chucking in geopolitics, that's a new category of altogether.
Yeah, I mean, it's never a dull day being a Chelsea fan. You're up here having won the Champions League, Club World Cup, Premier League, and then your club's being sanctioned and needs a new owner. But let's talk about that, because that is the big news at the moment, Chelsea being sanctioned. For people that may live under a rock and don't know quite what's happened, I'll give you a really, really, really quick update on where we are today. Now, Roman Abramovich, who has been the owner of Chelsea for 19 years now, coming up to nearly 20 years, has been sanctioned by the UK government for his links to Vladimir Putin and everything that is happening between Russia and Ukraine. Now, because of that sanction, it means all of his assets in the UK have been frozen, including and namely Chelsea Football Club. Now, he had originally put the club up for sale the week before his sanctions, but now that he has been sanctioned, the government have taken control, and basically, if the club are sold, Roman Abramovich can make no money from that sale. So that roughly brings us up to where we are today. A very, very quick update. There's a lot more info about that, but we've covered that in YouTube videos. You guys can check that out on the Football Daily YouTube channel. Now, I want to talk more so about the future of Chelsea and the issues and prospects that the club has. Now, according to The Guardian, the Rain Group, which is basically the US bank tasked with handling the sale of Chelsea, have been given the potential for bidders to bid at the end of this week. So Friday, March the 18th, to make their final offers. Now, of course, it's important that that this process goes smoothly, given that any delays could increase the chance of Chelsea falling into major financial trouble. Nizar, what are the main concerns so far for Chelsea considering selling the club?
Yeah, the main concern is speed, because cash flow will be the issue. You know, Chelsea are suffering in terms of not selling certain amount of tickets. If they don't get those tickets, they don't operate with the profits that they expect. You know, there's also the merchandising they can't, you know, bring in and certain other things, certain other, you know, money from, you know, services that you have around football matches, around a club like that. So, yeah, Chelsea are at a risk. You know, the longer it goes on, that this money starts to add up and you know, they start to take a hit, and then, you know, maybe you know, the biggest concern, I think, you know, would be, can they pay a salary, or you know, Chelsea operate quite close to the sort of breadline of FFP, of profit and loss, you know, because they've had Roman Abramovich there, they could, you know, push it a bit further than maybe other clubs could. So I think that that's the main concern in terms of long term. I mean, I think that Chelsea is such an attractive proposition for possible owners that that it will sort itself out. Somebody will come in. It's just about, will the negotiations drag on? You know, will it be a problem bringing somebody in? But they also, you know, because the money's not going to Roman Abramovich, he's not putting it in his pocket, they can kind of go for like the best bid, the one that's most attractive for Chelsea, that will help Chelsea the most. That's one of the main factors that is driving the choice, because there's quite a lot of parties interested. So, you know, speed might be one of the, you know, if an owner can come in and take it quickly, that is one of the sort of advantages of any owner. So I think that that's sort of the situation there, that Chelsea just needs to get it done quickly. But the uncertainty is not helping. I think certain staff are worried about their job when you speak to them. You know, that's part-time staff and full-time. At the moment, everyone's been sort of reassured that they're okay, but there's no long-term assurances either. No one knows what the future holds in terms of when they are bought, what that kind of owner will be. And I guess we'll talk about that a bit more.
Yeah, Nizar, I wanted to ask you a question quickly about, well, we put out a tweet before this podcast, and one of the main responses was about the mood in the club, which you've just kind of covered there. But I wanted to ask you, how well do you think Chelsea as a football club have handled this situation? It's obviously pretty much unprecedented in terms of the manager, the staff, you know, the whole football club operation. How well do you think they've handled it?
The football department have been fantastic. I mean, that's exactly how I think anyone should handle it. You know, the comments of Kai Havertz and Thomas Tuchel yesterday, on point again. Tuchel just seems like a great guy. And, you know, to have that leader of the football department who says the right things, who believes the right things, ultimately, he is a nice person. He is a person who's well-rounded enough to understand the world, great communicator as well. You know, some of the stuff he said, you know, he called out Boris Johnson last time when he said, you could criticise Chelsea fans, but why don't you focus on more important issues relating to the Ukraine-Russia conflict. So, yeah, I thought that was a really clever point to make as well. And I just think that, it's just been excellent. And the good thing is now as well that we get to see this guy face to face. So your admiration just grows from, you know, in the Premier League, journalists are allowed to be in the press conferences now, face to face with them. And just being there with him, you just get more of a sense of what he's about and what kind of character he is. And you know, when the cameras do switch off, he's still that same relaxed Thomas. I'm sure Zach sees it as well. And you just can't help but admire him. You just can't help but grow, around his presence. So, in terms of, and they're winning as well. They're winning. So that proves they're doing okay. I mean, some of the performances haven't been great. I thought actually a bit lucky against Newcastle. Unbelievable goal. But in the circumstances, you're thinking, wow, what a performance to not be distracted. Same with Norwich. I was there and I was distracted. I couldn't even watch the game that closely. So the boys shutting themselves out and scoring those goals. Brilliant. And I think that they're humble enough as well to know that they're kind of playing for Chelsea fans who are quite miserable. The atmosphere on social media is toxic. You know, there's people in the club who don't have the job security of them. Like, you know, the worst case scenario, you know, Mason Mount's going to find a new team, no problem. But, you know, some of these staff would really be hurt if Chelsea, you know, if something happened. So they're fighting for those people, and that's what they say. And I think that's what's driving them now.
No, 100%. I think, the points there is, no matter what happens for the footballers, they can always earn their £100,000 a week somewhere else. It is very much about these guys within the club and the staff. And you're right, Thomas Tuchel has handled himself fantastically well and has come out of this, well, so far is looking to come out of this in even a better position for his own stead at the club. Now, it is understood that around as many, I should say, as 200 groups are supposedly have expressed interest in doing a deal for Chelsea. Now, beforehand, it was reported that Abramovich wanted about £3 billion. Is that true, the 200 groups and the amount of money that was mentioned then?
Yeah, I think that Abramovich originally asked for £3 billion. So, yeah, I was told the same thing. I always thought it was a bit high. I really did. And also now the money's not going to Roman Abramovich. There's sort of less of a reason. I know he said he was going to donate it to the victims of the war in Ukraine, but I think the how it was explained to me was he still wanted £3 billion to like give as much as he could or do whatever he wanted to do with it. I'm not sure what he wanted to do with it, even... Some of the briefings I do take with a pinch of salt sometimes because you feel like you're told anything at this point. It's geopolitics. It's not football, you know. I'm not being told who Chelsea are going to sign. I'm being told something about wealth of a very rich man. But, yeah, £3 billion, that's the reason that price tag's being quoted is because, you know, we were all told that at one point. It sounds like it'll be more like, you know, the maximum it'll be is about 2.5 billion, I think. And that's quite a lot. That's actually more than I think most people thought. I think because there's so many bidders that it's kind of drove up the price. We still don't really know where the money's going to go. We just know it's not going to go to Roman Abramovich as well. So that's another point that we're like, right, what's happening here? You know, the UK government are going to handle the money. And Rain Group are going to handle which buyer they go for. So it's kind of working like that. So the UK government just making sure it doesn't land in Abramovich's pocket, but then they have to work out where it does land. You know, can you reinvest that money back in the club? Would be good for Chelsea, but yeah, then, you know, buyers might be like, the other Premier League teams might be like, that's a competitive disadvantage to have Chelsea, who are already strong with 2.5 billion in the coffers. Wow. So, you know, there's loads of even inter-team politics going to happen here as well. That's the situation. The bidders, the numbers, yeah, 200 has been quoted. And I think there are quite a few that are still hiding in the shadows and they might be big players as well. So we have to say that, not everyone comes out. This situation, sometimes you just hear about a club being bought and then poof, it's gone. But there's been quite a few public bidders as well. 200, definitely not. We definitely don't know as many as 200, but, you know, on paper. But yeah, there could be that many amounts of interest. But it's always that number's always been talked up a lot to me. And sometimes I struggle to believe it. But even the fact there's about 10 bidders we know of, you know, between all the different journalists, that is quite promising for Chelsea. It shows what a great asset it is. And it isn't actually normal that many people buy a club like this. You know, look at Derby County in the Championship. They've been struggling to get out of the Mel Morris deal for a long time. So Chelsea's interest is huge. And it will be interesting to see what they come up with on Friday, 2 days away now, when the deadline passes.
Yeah, it's not long.
Indeed. Yeah, it's right around the corner. Okay, then. We mentioned a few of the public bidders so far. So I want to go into kind of the front runners and the guys that I guess have taken the most media attention, whether that is for their ginormous wealth or for the fact that they've just got in front of the camera the most and spoke. And the first one I want to talk about is a consortium led by Hansvorg Weiss, Todd Bowley and Jonathan Goldstein, who have supposedly submitted a bid in the region of £2 billion. For those of you that don't know too much about them, Hansvorg Weiss is an 86-year-old Swiss billionaire, and Forbes essentially estimates his worth at about £4.2 billion. He has links back into the medical industry. He's supposedly a really nice guy and gives a lot of money to charity and things like that, but he's never been involved in sports ownership before. How is their consortium looking? Do you think that they are the front runners? Because it is believed that they are leading the race for Chelsea.
Yeah, they've got Hansvorg Weiss with Todd Bowley, who's a US billionaire who is involved in sports and expressed an interest in buying Chelsea in the past. So I think that's why they're so well placed, because, you know, those two, Weiss seems serious. He's speaking a lot about it in the media. He's been quite public. He's done a, you know, interview. He's the first person out there. Then Bowley comes along and joins a consortium with him. So it becomes a Swiss-American consortium. Todd Bowley's got experience with the, LA Dodgers
LA
Dodgers. So, and then he tried to buy Chelsea in the past and he spoke a lot about football as well. He's clearly a fan. And they've added actually Jonathan Goldstein as well, who ironically is a Spurs fan. And he's joined their consortium. So those three are working together on their bid. And Goldstein, he's got that government connections. And I think this is another aspect that it comes down to, is that don't forget the government is sort of involved in this. So if you've got, if you're a Tory party donor, Conservative party donor, or, you know, you've got links in that world, then your bid might be stronger. So, yeah, I think that those are some of the facts at play there. Yeah, there's a lot of people call them front runners. A lot of Chelsea fans don't think they have the money, which is quite interesting. But, you know, they do seem like all good guys as well. You know, I think that that's an issue that's been put to me. They don't want politically sensitive bids, and maybe we'll discuss more about that in a minute. But yeah, I think that's one thing, is that these guys seem to be really on the level, you know, good people, donate to political parties, donate to charitable causes. They're very much public figures. So yeah, I think that works in their favour in this instance.
I was wondering, Nazar, because you just mentioned the potential benefits of being linked to or being, you know, Tory party donors, etc. Does that not enter sort of quite muddy ground if we've, you know, criticised states for getting involved in football clubs in the past? If the British government exactly can exert some influence over who buys Chelsea, is that really too different from some other scenarios we've seen?
Yeah, not really. I think it is a little bit controversial for sure, but we see it happening in our society a lot, don't we? When you're looking at the pandemic and the contracts that have been given out, a lot of them have, you know, there's a VIP lane for PPE and, you know, for the testing process. So it could be an element that's at play here, and it's definitely one that's been pitched to me. You know, at the end of the day, it is supposed to be Rain Group that decides. Mm. The government don't want to be, they don't want to associate themselves, because a new owner might also come in and ruin Chelsea or at least make them less successful on the pitch. And they don't want Chelsea fans blaming them for that issue, you know, evolving. But at the end of the day, it definitely doesn't hurt, like in all these kind of situations in business, to have the connections in these scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, is there a way you compare them if they were to take over, and how the ownership that they'd have? Would they be a free spending kind of owners? As you said, Chelsea fans are kind of doubtful about the money that they have compared to the Saudi media group, which we'll get onto in a bit. Do you think there'd be an owner that would be willing to spend the cash? Obviously, no one is going to spend the money that like Roman Abramovich was throughout the summers. But what should Chelsea fans expect if they were to take charge?
I think they'll be like the Liverpool owners. I think they'll be trying to be sustainable. I mean, they still spend a certain amount of money, but they're not, you know, the transfers have to work. There'll be even more incentive for them to work. And if they fail, then it's quite hard to fix it. You know, Chelsea have been able to worm their way out of situations that maybe other clubs couldn't, just because they're so cash rich. So, yeah, I think that's going to be the big difference, is it's not going to be free spending. And I don't think most of these bidders will be, you know. I think that most of them will try and convert Chelsea into a Liverpool-type club where, you know, you're still a big club, but you've got to watch your balance of books, watch your accounts, you know. Abramovich did put $1.5 billion into the club, and that's what he was owed in debts, and he's going to write them off. But, yeah, that sort of thing is long gone now.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Yes. Well, we'll move on to another person who is supposedly interested in Chelsea Football Club. He is a Chelsea fan. It is the British property tycoon Nick Candy, who is supposedly preparing a bid as well. I think he's basically going to set up another kind of consortium thing. Now, he also attended Chelsea's 1-0 win against Newcastle on the weekend. Sources close to Candy claim that he has been approached by a number of investors. He is a lifelong Chelsea fan. And the investment fund Citadel is also thought to be included in this. Candy has promised to give Chelsea fans a seat on the board if his bid is successful, which has made a lot of Chelsea fans very, very happy. He's saying the right things. He also told Sky Sports last weekend, I've supported Chelsea since the age of 4. My dad was asked to play for Chelsea. I love Chelsea. I don't mind where it ends up, even if it's not with me, as long as it's in safe hands. Now, Candy's offer would be subject to compliance with the strict conditions imposed by the government as well, as part of the license granted. Now, how likely is Nick Candy to go forward with this? I mean, as you mentioned there, he doesn't necessarily mind as long as it's in right hands. Does this one feel more like a PR stunt rather than an actual bid? What do you know about him and his kind of investors?
Yeah, it does a bit. It does a bit. I know that he's not one of the wealthier people involved in this situation, so it really does pin on his investors. So who can he attract to be in his consortium? Like, is it going to be hedge funds? Where's that money going to come from? And that's what concerns me about him. And obviously, he's a Chelsea fan, and you know, you've got a bit of suspicion that he's maybe playing a big I am with all his wealthy mates and stuff like that. But then I was hearing some news this weekend that that he came into Stamford Bridge. We all saw him actually did an interview with Sky Sports News. They caught him outside the ground. He just went to watch Chelsea like he normally does.
Coincidentally.
Yeah.
Oh, the cameras have caught me again.
Yeah. I'm sure his public relations person was like, yeah, he'll walk past him. He's actually gone the long way around to get to his seat. that's kind of the feeling about him. But then I got a bit of news that he did actually meet Bruce Buck and Marina after the match.
Okay.
And he went up to their floor, so it's the West Stand, and then he went up the lift with Bruce Buck and Marina was there, and they had a meeting about his bid and what he wants to do and all that. And he wants to bring in the fans, of course, which goes down pretty well. You know, if you don't have that much money, what can you do? Bring in the fans. You know, make sure the fans are catered for, make the club more transparent. There are a lot of things Chelsea can do to progress without pumping in loads of money. So I think he's saying all the right things in that regard as well. And he has a business, you know, what we're saying about the last bid with Jonathan Goldstein, Nick Candy has the connections because he's been to one of those Conservative Party Christmas parties that he shouldn't have been at. And he was there, so that proves that, you know, he's right in there with the government, and that's also, you know, a factor in his favour. But I just have a bit skeptical about the news. You know, every time a journalist contacts his spokesperson, they're willing to talk about this, that, or the other, and you're a bit like, is that really how a serious bidder operates?
Yeah.
You know, does he have enough money? And those are the two big things that make me a bit suspicious. But the connections and the meeting that happened on Sunday, you know, go against that as well. So I'm a bit in two minds about this one.
One of the things I read about Nick Candy, Nizar, was that he was willing to redevelop Stamford Bridge. And obviously we know that Chelsea, one of the most attractive clubs to go to in the world. Obviously it's in prime real estate location, but the stadium is probably a little bit behind others in terms of capacity, etc. How important do you think anyone promising to redevelop the stadium will be to the Rain Group maybe deciding that they are the right candidate?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, we've heard about this brochure that's come out, and they're saying what's good about Chelsea and all this, and everything's good about Chelsea except the stadium from like a, you know, business point of view, and that is one opportunity there is there to sort of expand. But the thing about building or developing a stadium, it needs to be a long-term owner because it'll take at least 3 years to build. That's a positive estimate. And then you need to pay it off over, you know, years and years, decades. You know, Spurs are plunged themselves into debt building their brilliant stadium, and Chelsea could do the same. You know, if the owner's not as rich, it's probably the one thing Abramovich didn't get to do at Chelsea. So,
And Arsenal's competitiveness as well, going down after the Emirates, etc. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Chelsea have two disadvantages, really, when it comes to, commercialising against the other big six teams. Stadium, one of them, I think it's the 10th biggest stadium in the league, maybe even lower than that. So it's below like West Ham even. It's below, Everton are getting a new one. So it's really low down the list. And then, commercially, they don't do as well on, sponsorships as like, your Man United, Liverpool and Man City. We could argue Man City's case at the top table there, but should they be there?
We'll be here for hours.
Yeah. Speaking of geopolitics, but that's
there you go.
There's the two disadvantages. So I think that's some of the commercial opportunities there for a new owner. If they've got the connections, then they can develop those two areas.
Interesting. Well, I think we should move on to the ones that I think have caused a lot of interest online, at least. The Saudi media group, who, according to Ben Jacobs of CBS Sports, says that they've submitted an offer of £2.7 billion. Now, the company is headed by Mohammed Al-Khahiji, who is a Chelsea fan. He studied at Cass Business School in London and spent 3 years as well working for the Deutsche Bank. Now, the Saudi media group has no immediate links to the Saudi government, unlike the PIF, who now own Newcastle United. However, it only reportedly generates £770 million, and CBS believes that Al-Khahiji has approached the Saudi royal Mohammed bin Khalid Al-Said. I really hope I pronounced that right. Apologies. For additional funding for the bid. Now, given the current climate as well, and that the UK government are actually meeting with Saudi Arabia for not football, but politics, is their bid legitimate? Are there serious concerns about it? Is Chelsea willing to work with another kind of, I know there's no immediate links, but relations with another kind of state-owned company or business?
Yeah, I think that's maybe their great detraction is that there are parts state-owned. It's not fully private. So Saudi media, there's absolutely no state involvement. Then there's a parent company above it called Engineer Holding Group. And, that also exists within another parent group called MBS. MBS is an investment fund which has, it's a massive media group that is dominant in the Middle East. And they have a little bit of Saudi government involvement. So if you follow the paper trail up the tree, eventually you have Saudi money. But I think that's how businesses operate in Saudi Arabia. I was told that connection that you mentioned, though, with the government backing directly, that's not true. But that's the bigger concern is that if you follow the money around the company, you can eventually find public money around and PIF. The owners of Newcastle, that's obviously potentially a conflict of interest if people see it that way. I actually don't think that's enough in my opinion, from what I understand, for the Premier League to block it. The directors, the directors test, the fit and proper persons test, it isn't the most stringent, and it has come under criticism lately. So I don't think that it's as controversial enough to not go through that process. And it's less controversial than Newcastle's bid because it's not actually, Mohammed bin Salman, who's the Saudi royal, leader there. So it's not almost directly linked to him. It's quite far removed, at least from the government. So, this bid is attractive, I think. They are serious. They believe that they're not connected enough to the Saudi royals for it to be a problem. They feel like they're totally independent business as well. They feel like they have the funds and expertise as well. So, yeah, it's they've got a lot of private backers as well. The figure of 700 million turnover, that's a concern, but they have a lot of other backers in. And we don't really know who the backers are, but they're thought to be Saudi or Middle Eastern individuals. They've got great expertise in football. They've got a great expertise in sponsorship. So they've built a football stadium already. So that's going to be part of their offering. It's Mursal Park. I probably haven't pronounced it correctly, but it's one of the Saudi teams' stadium. They're involved in Al Nassr and Al Hilal. Al Hilal played against Chelsea in the Club World Cup.
Yeah. Tough game, to be honest.
And they have the Chelsea fan, element as well, because Mohamed is supposed to be a Chelsea fan, and he's been to several games, including the Man United Chelsea game in November, which was 1-1, and the last time Roman Abramovich was in the stadium, coincidentally, at Stamford Bridge, and maybe the last time he ever will be. So, there's been connections. He must have met Roman Abramovich before as well, at that game and maybe at the Club World Cup as well, although that I've not had that verified to myself. So, yeah, they seem like serious players. A lot of Chelsea fans want it. A lot of other Chelsea fans don't because of the Saudi connections. I think that if they did win the race, they might have to go on the PR offensive just to try and explain themselves, a bit like Newcastle did when they took over.
Yeah, it will certainly be interesting. I can only imagine the scenes right now if the Newcastle bid goes, Newcastle ownership goes through, and the Chelsea one, if it does turn out to be the leading bid, is denied. There's going to be an absolute riot online. But this is more of a question I wanted to ask, it's more of a journalism question, really. Do you think it's... Look, I don't really remember when Roman Abramovich took over Chelsea because I was only really a boy, but it seems like in sports journalism, there's definitely been more question marks and scrutiny around football ownership in the last even 5, 10 years, really. I don't really remember the same questions being asked even when the Man City group took over Man City. How do you think football journalism has changed with regard to, scrutinising football owners more closely?
I guess the world has changed a little bit. We've had some pretty crazy things happen to us in the last few years. So, I think that might have had an impact, with those owners. I think, the way I always saw football was like transfers are great. Like they're absolutely king. Like the money coming in, we love it. We get so excited about the net worth of an owner or like the transfers they're going to bring in, the sort of money they're talking about, the investment in the club, stadiums, all this kind of stuff. And I guess that maybe we lost our way a little bit from, the grassroots of football, the fan culture of football as well. The Tracy Crouch report, that sort of, has recommended a golden share that fans can have in clubs. That's a bit like what they do in Germany. And I'm a big fan of German football, the models they have. Of course, the weakness there is that Bayern Munich's dominance is king and very hard to dislodge. But the fans own the clubs. And, when you go to a German match, and I've been lucky enough to watch football around the world, the experience in the German football stadiums is excellent. It's £10 in maximum. Even for Bayern Munich, it's cheap to get in. You get food, you can get your beer. Everything's normal price or cheap. You're just treated with a lot of respect, and it's a great culture. And it just creates a great atmosphere and very inclusive atmosphere as well. So I think we've gone down a different route where we're hyper-commercialised. The Premier League era was all about copying the American model, the billionaire-run teams. But the American model, the franchise model, doesn't have relegation and promotion, so it ends up causing problems down the league. So there's just all these various problems with our system where we're chasing money but we're not really looking after the little guy, and I think that maybe nowadays we need to start to think about looking after the little guy. And I think that a lot of Chelsea fans, Chelsea supporters trust, they're trying to get that golden share.
Yeah, fantastic.
Mentioned. Yeah, and I think that that's great, and I think that should happen. I don't know if it will happen, but I think it should happen because, I think it's time to, use this Chelsea example, which is a bit of a disaster, and try and turn it into a positive. Try and turn it into, this is now a transparent club with fans involved, and they're going to set the example, and they're going to try and win with fans involved, and I think that would be really nice.
I'd be very happy to see actually that this happening for Chelsea. Hopefully it is fixed and fixed fast, and a new owner is able to come in, but have an impact on the rest of the league and have an impact on the way we look at football. That's what I would love with my heart, but with my head, I feel like personally it probably just won't happen. And once Chelsea are bought by a new owner, it's back to business. And who is the next £100 million signing? Unfortunately, which is the way with especially I think the Premier League goes. It's just it's all reactionary, and very much what is last week's news is last week's news, and it's about the future. We'll see. We'll see. Fingers crossed. Touch wood, as they say. One last guy I want to talk to you about is Woody Johnson, who is the owner of the New York's Jets NFL team and is also said to be weighing up an offer for Chelsea. Now, the 74-year-old billionaire is the heir to the Johnson & Johnson pharmaceutical fortune, which is estimated to be valued at about $5.7 billion. Now, he's also a vocal Trump fan, and Donald made him an ambassador to the UK between 2017 and 2021, which is apparently the reason how he fell in love with football and Chelsea in that time. Now, to give some info about the New York Jets, they've basically been rubbish ever since he bought them back in the year 2000 for $635 million. They haven't won a Super Bowl since or made the playoffs in 11 years, which is the longest drought in the NFL. He is not a popular owner, with banners appearing asking for him to sell up. Now, considering the Glazers and the Cronkies are not overly loved in the UK, he may struggle to win favour here. How is his kind of bid looking at the moment for Chelsea? Do you know too much about it?
I don't know loads about it, but he's definitely a serious player. That Glazer comparison seems to be apt. I think that there is concerns about that from Chelsea supporters. But yeah, he's definitely a serious player. He's got the money, he's got the connections, and I think he's among the front runners, if not a front runner himself. So yeah, he sees an asset, but does he see it as an opportunity like he does with his New York Jets team that Christian Pulisic supports, right? So
Yeah, he does.
Maybe he could give him a bit of help. And yeah, Pulisic's the only guy's face is on the brochure, apparently, you know, the one that's gone out to investors. So, he might see an opportunity to bring Chelsea to the US. And I think a lot of these owners do see that. I think one of the attractions is that, you know, with the Saudi bid, they want to bring Chelsea to the Middle East a lot more and use Chelsea to promote certain things in the Middle East. And similarly here with the US. And I think that's sort of a driver for a lot of these people. You know, they don't do it out of the goodness of their heart, really. They've got business ideas. They've got investment ideas and they want to take over. So, yeah, I think he's serious. But, yeah, beyond that, I think we're just waiting till the Friday deadline to see who's chosen, because you know, a lot of these guys are serious. So it's going to be a choice. It's going to be a hard choice for the people who do it. And to be honest, you know, it does worry me a little bit, some of this argument between like the government and Chelsea and then Rain Group, who kind of represent Abramovich. You're like, can we all get along? Because it's such a really important decision to make on Friday. So, yeah, we'll see. But I think Woody's a serious contender.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
One of the questions we were asked on Twitter, Nizar, was from a guy called Dull49, great handle, and he wanted to know, this may be more your personal opinion, what do you think is the best and worst case scenario in terms of these potential owners taking over? Is there any particular one that you particularly, you know, want or don't want?
I think the worst case is a Glazer scenario, which we kind of discussed there. I don't think Chelsea are going to go out of business. I think it's almost negligible chance unless it's a botched sale, unless they're forced into, you know, just uncertainty for months and months and months. Like, Chelsea are going to be fine. But they could have a Glazer situation where you feel a bit like the club's being asset stripped. You know, they're trying to reduce the wage bill. They're trying to reduce spending by quite a lot. You know, that could happen, and that would concern me. You know, a new owner could say the right things and then come in and do, you know, completely the opposite. So I guess that's generally, people are worried about the Americans because, you know, US people go in sports to make money, and making money in football is very, very hard. It's almost impossible, really. You know, if you're breaking even, you're doing well. So, yeah, that's I think that's the greatest concern, which isn't a big concern. And then, yeah, obviously the best thing is pretty much emulating Abramovich. So I think a lot of Chelsea fans would have liked Abramovich to stay, you know, for him not to have his reputation damaged and things like that. But unfortunately, that ship has sailed completely. That will never, they'll never come back. But yeah, maybe, you know, with the Saudi bid, could they be one to put in money? I think we're just comparing it to Newcastle. I don't think that's actually definitely going to happen. So maybe a Saudi bid could put in a bit more money and have, you know, more, you know, liquid cash, and it becomes a soft power asset as well for the Saudi government to, like, you know, in negotiations and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think those are the kind of best and worst case scenarios, is that either Chelsea have a lot of money or they don't. Yeah, I think that the other aspect is how likable are Chelsea going to be? Because, are they going to get an owner that does all the right things, you know, with the Chelsea Foundation? You know, they could go in and invest loads of money in the charity, secure people's jobs, give the fans a place on the board, a golden share, like a share of the club. They could also pay off the Chelsea pitch owners' loan, so the Chelsea pitch owners owe money to Chelsea. You know, that's the organisation that owns the Stamford Bridge pitch. So Chelsea has this unique structure where fans actually own the pitch, and it means that Chelsea can't move the stadium anywhere else. They have to play at Stamford Bridge unless they get permission from these people. So that's why Chelsea are going to build on the same site, you know, when they did have the redevelopment project under Abramovich. So they could pay off the money that's owed by the fans to the club, and that would also give them, you know, a big boost as well there. So there's a lot of things that the owners can do that are not to do with money as well, that could really bring fans on side. And I think that there's kind of, yeah, two aspects. Some fans only care about money, they only care about transfers, they only care about that. But a lot of the fans who go to the games do care about the experience. They want low ticket prices, they want a nice experience, they want, you know, the football facilities to be developed in the right way. They don't want to be seen as like a mean, horrible, juggernaut financial club. They want to be doing the right things charitably and saying the right things and standing for the right things. So an owner could win a lot of points without investing money here. And I think that after Abramovich, who's been brilliant in lots of ways, that could be a great, vote winner among fans.
Yeah, there's certainly going to be a lot of scrutiny over who takes over, given the Abramovich situation. Do you think it might potentially go down, you know, with this Abramovich situation, if the Premier League or the government has more of a say in who takes over Chelsea than in any other football ownership takeover that we've had in the past in the Premier League or around the world? Do you think there's going to be a certain build-up of resentment from Chelsea fans about why they are being made to be an example when there was no issue when Man City were taken over or Newcastle were taken over?
I think that ship has sailed. There already is resentment about that. It really is. Certainly in my... I can't even read my Twitter anymore. It's like full of the most angry people in the world. I think the way I would put it is a bit differently. I think that the problems Chelsea have had are not confined to Chelsea. So a lot of fans are like laughing at Chelsea's expense, and that's fine. You know, Chelsea have had 21 trophies in 19 years. You know, when you get knocked down as a big club, you know, you'd look at Man United. They're getting slapped around from pillar to post, and that's just par for the course after all that, you know, success. And as a Sunderland fan, you can't be too sensitive about that yourself. So.
Absolutely.
But I think with the Chelsea thing is a bit like careful what you wish for with certain fans in particular, because I think that this could spread. You know, the world we live in is more uncertain, and are we going to be allies with all these countries forever? What are the relationships going to be? And as soon as there's a problem, you know, and this war could get worse as well, which is the serious and point, is where are the battle lines going to be drawn between these all these different countries? And maybe, you know, other countries get dragged into it, and you know, you're taking clubs off other owners, and other clubs are in crisis. So Chelsea could just be the first of a dozen, really, here, or half a dozen at least. And I think that's probably an issue. That might be an issue, and maybe the ownership model or the way the Premier League is policed really needs to be looked at here.
Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of mentioned it there. Like, we talk about Chelsea, we talk about these owners and how much billions of money is going to be spent and what summer transfer plans are going to happen. But at the end of the day, there's still a war going on where Ukrainian people are having to hide under in bunkers. So I think that, yeah, that is probably the biggest issue out of them all. One kind of, we'll do a couple of final points I wanted to mention. You mentioned earlier that actually there is a possibility that the guy that ends up owning Chelsea, we would not have heard of at all. How likely do you think that is going to be, that these guys who don't necessarily need the PR of saying, I'm going to put in a bid for Chelsea, they've got a lot of money, and that maybe when it comes to it, it is someone that we've not heard of at all?
Yeah, it could be, and that's what annoys me about the situation is that, yeah, I'm here talking about the Saudi bid, and there might be a guy who's just hiding under a rock somewhere just last minute. I mean, the deadline hasn't even passed yet, so he could just put in a bid tomorrow or whatever. Like, absolutely fine. That's what I'd be doing. I'm like a last minute kind of guy, you know. I'd be like, like, come on, boys, let's get
out. One of those guys that sits on eBay sniping. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and that would be absolutely legitimate. There's no, and a lot of the reason why these guys are going public, right, is to win fan opinion over, because fan opinion in football is absolutely king. So if, like, the Rain group see that, like the Saudi media group is really popular, or the Swiss American consortium, they'll be like, oh, well, we've got to take these guys seriously, because, you know, one of the pros is that the fans want them. So, I think that's what's happening here, is that there's a public, these people are trying to win the public opinion war in this competition. So, I think there could be a last minute bidder. Sure, there could be, absolutely. I mean, if there's 200 expressions of interest, apparently, then there's a chance. So, it's going to be interesting. I'm really going to Middlesbrough on Saturday, so I'm gonna have to be really just looking at what comes out, really, rather than watching a match again. I feel like there could be bidders coming out during the match, all this kind of stuff. Like, it's been absolutely chaotic.
I mean, well, they knocked out United, and they knocked out Spurs, so who knows how that result could go. I wanted to ask a quick question about how the contractual situation for players. Obviously, Antonio Rudiger, Aspilicueta, Andreas Christensen, they look like their contracts are ending at the end of this season. There's rumours about Christensen already kind of agreeing one with Barcelona. Antonio Rudiger is the big one here. I've also seen as well Aspilicueta, supposedly, if he reaches a certain number of appearances, his extension of a year can get triggered. But Rudiger is a huge one. He's been very, very important to Thomas Tuchel. Do you know much about how, from a player's perspective, people that they're feeling, and that someone like Rudiger, I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, they were talking about a new deal. Now they're probably not talking about that at all.
Yeah, the players have obviously handled it very well, and I feel like there's a bit of a siege mentality in the squad, like they're all coming together really well. But when it comes to the contracts, yeah, Rudiger was getting closer, I felt like, really did, because you were hearing stuff like Chelsea were going to make him the highest paid defender in the club's history. They wanted him to take on a lot of responsibility because of that. They wanted him to be like a sort of captain in the group. And you were kind of seeing that on the pitch as well. The amount that he talks now on the pitch compared to before is huge. And, you know, you were seeing this guy emerge. And then this sort of sanctioning has stopped Chelsea from moving any contract renewals forward. Like, they literally can't do a new deal. So any deals they've got in the past, they can honour them, but they can't do any new deals. So it's completely stops the talks. Obviously, as soon as a new owner comes in, they could be like, we want to sign him up right away. I know the Saudi media bid, they want to make sure Rudiger stays, and that might just be a vote winner with fans, or it might be true. But, I think any owner would be like looking at Rudiger and saying, this guy's one of our best players, we need to sign him up. That's kind of been the issue there. I think with Christensen, he was already on the way out. The talks had completely frozen between Chelsea and his side. And then Barcelona are coming in really strong, like absolutely strong. I mean, there's some news today out of Catalonia that it's done. There's been a bit of news like that. It's always been denied to me, but there's been some people are suggesting it's done. It could well be. And then there's Aspilicueta, of course, as well, who does actually have a clause in his contract for Chelsea to renew him if he plays a certain amount of games. So I feel like that could go through even with the sanctions, because it's a deal agreed before the sanction, you know. So that one is interesting. But Chelsea also are like so thankful to Aspilicueta, they might step aside even if that clause gets activated to give him an extra year. They might step aside and say, look, you can join the club you want to join. And Barcelona, again, are the ones who are really pushing there. They love a free transfer now after their problems. And So those are the three that we're looking at. So the Rudiger one is actually the one that's been most impacted, really. And yeah, that's another reason that Chelsea needs to get this done sooner rather than later, because I felt it was moving towards a renewal. And at one point, I didn't think it would. So yeah, they need to get Rudiger renewed. I'm sure you agree, Zach. And yeah,
100%.
Signed a ting.
Nizar, I want to ask you about, you know, you're obviously saying that there's a bit of a rush with these players that potentially leave you on the end of contracts. People want to know about Chelsea's summer business. They've obviously got a lot of work to do to catch up with Man City. When this deal goes through, I mean, how long is this deal going to take to go through is what I mean. And will summer business be unimpacted if it does go through?
Yeah, I think that it will be impacted in some way, but I'm sure like Thomas Tuchel and the staff at Chelsea will still want the same transfers. So, you know, like they want Jules Koundé, who's a massive target in defence. And I've been told it's a one-in-one-out policy in the summer. So Chelsea already have a big squad, so they want to sell players while buying them. So, yeah, don't stockpile talent. So, yeah, Koundé might be the one who comes in for Christensen, who looks likely to leave. So that would be a definite signing. And then if they sell a player in another position, might sell an attacker, might sell a midfielder, replace them with somebody like a Declan Rice or whoever else. So, yeah, that's sort
just
of...
Just Declan Rice and Koundé then. Yeah, you relax, Chelsea fans, you'll be fine.
But then they need money for that, so will the new owner put their hands in their pockets? I mean, to a certain extent, Chelsea are fine because they have the Champions League money, they have the Premier League money, they will qualify for the Champions League. There's absolutely no doubt that anyone's going to catch them up, in my opinion. So that's a huge advantage for the summer, the transfer window, stability and all that. So transfer window... Those are sort of my thoughts on that, and but the long term in terms of how much Chelsea will spend, I'm not sure how that will continue. It won't be like it was before.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that I guess we'll probably talk a lot more about over the coming weeks, especially once we find out who this new owner may be. One final question that I wanted to ask you then before we call things off. Marina Granovskaya, Bruce Buck, Petr Cech, these guys that are on the board, what are their futures at the moment? I think Cech personally will probably be okay, but in terms of Marina Granovskaya, who's been so important as well over the past couple of years for Chelsea, kind of taking this mix of a sporting director role as well as her previous role as well. What are their futures looking like at the moment?
Yeah, I agree with you that Petr Cech's probably all right. And I think anyone in the football operations, all right. It works so well. It's absolutely brilliant. But yeah, Marina Granovskaya is a huge part. She pretty much heads up the football operation at Chelsea, does all the deals, transfers in, transfers out, contracts, all that kind of stuff. You only ever see her at contract renewal or a new signing because she likes to keep a low profile, really. But yeah, she's been a good asset to Chelsea, really good. Of course, Chelsea have had some bad signings too, but they've outperformed certainly Man United, Arsenal, and Tottenham. I think that the future for her would be uncertain because I think that Chelsea's structure is completely unique. It's very, very unusual in the world of football. It's not your usual sporting director, CEO, hierarchy. There's a very unique structure, and it's kind of all built around Roman Abramovich being the owner, who sometimes gets involved in decisions as well. So she's very close to Roman Abramovich. She worked for him before she came to Chelsea, and that's kind of how their relationship built, and she took on that role and she's handled it brilliantly. But when people deal with Chelsea, you know, like football agents, people like that, they deal with a club that is not typical in the world of football. It works and they really admire that, but it's not typical. So I feel like a new owner, there might be a transition period where these people do carry on, but I think eventually they might go to a more traditional footballing structure. Marina is very all-powerful, really, in a football operation role. And I think they'll maybe get a less all-powerful figure, to replace her and maybe have more of a, you know, classic hierarchical structure where people are below. Petr Cech's probably part of it, and that's my feeling. Bruce Buck as well is very close to Roman Abramovich. So, he acted as a lawyer for him in the past. There's also Eugene Tenenbaum, who's on the board. And I feel like the people who've got a direct relationship with Roman Abramovich, probably their days are numbered and they will be replaced. So I think that those three figures may probably leave eventually. But I feel like, you know, a lot of the time when you have these big transitions in huge businesses, Chelsea's not just a football club. It's a huge business that employs 1,400 people. I think there'll be a transition period, and then there'll be sort of a, they'll move on to a new era of Chelsea, which will be fine. And yeah, it could be, yeah, just a new way of doing things, and that's fine. But we'll have to be thankful to Marina Granovskaya when she leaves, because I think she's done a pretty good job.
She definitely has. I think, I don't know where Chelsea would be without her, to be quite honest. Well, Nazar, thank you so much. I think we've been going on for about an hour now. You've given us so much information. I can't thank you enough. Thank you. I'm sure the fans at home are very much enjoying this. You know what? In a week's time or 2 weeks' time, when things have changed completely, we'll try and get you back on as well and see where the future of Chelsea is looking like there. Thank you so much. Where can the people at home find you?
Yeah, I work for Goal, so you can find me writing on Goal. And yeah, I'm on all the social media platforms. You'd usually have YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So yeah, follow me, and I'll try and keep you updated about this crazy club that is Chelsea.
Amazing. We'll make sure your links as well are in the description below. If you're listening on any podcast streaming app, make sure you rate this episode 5-star and the podcast 5-star. If you're watching YouTube, I hope you guys have enjoyed it. Subscribe to the channel, like the video, leave a comment as well on what you think the future of Chelsea is as well. Get us at us on social media. That is Chelsea. It could be a very, very different place in a week's time, but we'll have to see. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you guys soon. Bye.